Welcome to the Crexie Podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In each episode, the Crexie team connects with featured CRE experts to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome and thank you all for joining us for this episode of the Crexie Podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a broad range of topics that both cater to CRE newcomers and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Ashley Kopovich, Director of Partnerships here at Crexie. And today we are thrilled to sit down with Jason Pontricole of Pharma Property Group. Before we dive in, a little bit about our guest. Jason formed Pharma Property Group in 2012, and since that time has closed roughly $2 billion in drugstore properties occupied by Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid. His extensive track record includes over 300 drugstore property sale transactions and over 1,500 drugstores underwritten with property values totaling $5 billion. These credentials make Jason one of the most experienced drugstore real estate brokers in the history of triple net investments. Before forming Pharma Property Group, Jason worked at the nation's largest CRE investment brokerage company, Marcus & Millichap. He was a former top 30 producer for the firm out of over 1,300 agents nationwide. He also served as VP of Acquisitions and Dispositions for National Single Tenant Net Lease, Built-to-Suit Developer as a district manager for one of Johnson & Johnson's largest pharmaceutical companies, Ortho McNeil. Jason graduated from the University of San Diego with a bachelor's in accountancy. He was captain of the tennis team both in his junior and senior years, leading the team to multiple Division I NCAA tournament appearances. He is a proud native of San Diego and is married with two sons. Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Ashley. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Doing so well. I'm sure our listeners are thrilled to dive into our show here today with you for a number of reasons. But thanks so much for joining us and taking the time to spend with us and our listeners.
Of course. So,
Jason, I know that we just covered your background, but I'd love to learn briefly more about your career path and some lessons learned along the way. Where are you from? How did you get your first start in commercial real estate?
I grew up in San Diego, and after college, one of my high school friends was actually working at Marcus & Millichap, and at the time, I was district manager at Johnson & Johnson doing pharmaceutical sales, this was back in 2007, 2008, and, my friends seemed to be doing pretty well, and I said, you know, maybe I'll take a look at that industry, and eventually got into Marcus & Millichap, and started off kind of doing local real estate retail, and then made the switch to national net lease. Had a lot of built-to-suit clients at the time, and also had done some sell leasebacks throughout the country, but, you know, single tenant retail focused there at, Marcus & Millichap. And then after that, I kind of went off and eventually did Pharma Property Group.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. I love that story of how you initially came on and then found your niche and started your own group. What initially led you to the field of retail and pharmacies? Was there something that initially attracted you? How did you find that being your niche?
Yeah, I think, 2010, 2011, a lot of our built-to-suit clients, the pipeline started to dry out a little bit. You know, a lot of America was built out, you know, for obvious reasons with the greater economy, with development slowing down. You know, I started recognizing that a lot of these single tenant properties, would need advisement as the leases kind of rolled over as they came to maturity. And, drugstores, there were a lot of them, and there are a lot of them. And I just thought that was a good place to kind of plant the flag and really focus, on, as I saw a lot of the sales becoming more, second generation trading hands versus, built a suit developer to owner. It would be more owner to owner. And so I saw a need for that. And that's kind of how we came up with it.
I love that. And Jason, you just mentioned being an advisor. So, how did you cultivate the real estate skills that you needed to succeed as an investment advisor to your clients?
I think it just took time, and really practice and going through the deal making, and it's just experience. At the end of the day, I think just being really detail oriented and listening is a big key part of what I do, and making sure that you're doing what's best for the client, and kind of like meeting their investment goals. It's not so much about talking, but maybe more listening. So.
I love that you hit on that point, listening so many times. And I think for all the sellers that are listening to our podcast right now, that's so important. And they're really good advisors and brokers. They listen to their client, they make sure that those goals and needs are at the forefront. So I love hearing that from you. What led you to start your own firm? And then tell our listeners maybe some challenges you experienced starting your own business, and then, how did your team overcome them? So what led you to it, and then maybe some challenges you faced.
Yeah, good question. I think initially what led me to it was, when you look at the revenue and, being at another brokerage house and having them take 30, 40% of my, revenues, if you did the math over time, to be honest, that's what initially kind of triggered the thought. And then secondly, to become more of a specialist, within the net lease sector. I think net lease professionals are already viewed as specialists, but to take it a step further, and become I guess, a specialist, a niche within a niche, really kind of attracted me. And there was no playbook at the time. And I think that that challenge was something that really kind of pushed me towards, doing drugstores, and the fact that there's 20,000 of them nationwide, or they what there was at that time. So there's a lot of product, and I just saw a need to kind of advise clients and those landlords in that space.
Definitely that entrepreneurial spirit, I think, especially not having a playbook for some of this stuff, you have to just try and fail and try again and see what works. So really admirable on your end. I'm sure there was a lot of lessons that you learned, especially early on, or mentors that you worked with and helped you find success. Tell us maybe a little bit about some lessons or some early mentors that helped shape your career.
Yeah, I mean, I think, going back to not having a playbook, I think it was really just learning on your own. I mean, there was no instruction manual on how to build a national brokerage firm that specialized in drugstores. But I think early on, I kind of learned to, have other allies within the net lease sector that maybe had independent brokerage firms, and so there was a few that we kind of leaned on early. And I think the biggest lessons early were details. I mean, you've got to be detail focused on everything you do, not just you, the people that you bring on. Whether that's an underwriting, and finding that one comp in a market that has little or no data, and digging into it to the second and third and fourth levels, I think that the detail oriented is huge.
I love that. I love that you're talking about being detailed, whether it's in work, research, bringing people around you. What other fundamental tenets of your work ethic that you have that think contributed most to your success, either as an individual broker, your team's leader? So detail-oriented one, anything else, meditation, working out, or more obviously, work specific
Yeah,
inside or
I think
outside your
yeah, no, that's yeah, that's a loaded question. But I think when it comes down to it, it's just having care for the client and making sure that you're taking pride in your craft and being the best that you can. And at a certain point, you hit a certain success level, and of course, everybody wants to make money. But I think what we're really focused on, and the team, is just trying to become the best drugstore brokers that we can be, and kind of taking it to the next level. I think that that's really key, is the process and the day in, day out. I mean, it sounds kind of cheesy and redundant. Everybody says process, but at the end of the day, if you don't have those processes in place, then there's no way forward or any way to judge yourself besides compensation. And I think it needs to go beyond compensation. I think it needs to be, hey, are we the best brokers that we can be for the client?
I love that you hit on that. There is one thing that you said. It's not just about commission. It's not just about the end goal, but really making sure that your process is there. I know someone who said, you know, it's not necessarily the end result, because sometimes you can control that, but you really can't. You can control yourself, your process, and how good you are at the at bat. Right. So if you're getting enough at bats and you're perfecting that, which is the process, then the outcome will eventually happen. But I really love that you just hit on that. So thank you for sharing. Can you talk us through the story of founding Pharma Property Group? So can you share maybe a few pioneering events or big wins you were involved in early in your career?
You know, it's a good question. I was thinking about that pretty deeply. And of course, every broker's got, you know, big accounts they bring in or deals they look back on. But I think really it's the people. I think the people that we have on the team currently and when we retained them, you know, for lack of a better word, it's beyond just one or two deals here or there. It's the gift that keeps giving. I mean, if you get the right team around yourself that's detail oriented, all the things we talked about, when looking back, I think those are the big wins. You know, how we found those certain team members and how they've kind of grown with the company. Because at the end of the day, you know, when we were looking for people to join, nobody had a specific, you know, drugstore experience. I mean, it's a pretty unique, you know, field. So we've kind of had a mold and shape a lot of the people we brought on. But those were probably the biggest wins, I think.
Invest in your people, surround yourself with the right kind of talents. I couldn't agree more. So you have the right people around you, and then you'll eventually grow. So great job with building that team. Moving into our second topic of the day. So I want to cover the investment world of pharmacies. So to provide some context, can you quickly explain the foundations of the pharmacy sector?
Yeah, so, you know, when we first started the company, there was maybe 20,000, you know, drugstores across the country. And I'm talking about the three big chains that are freestanding drugstores, such as, you know, Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid. I think each chain, you know, had dramatic growth from late 90s during the 2000s. I mean, Walgreens in the 2000s was building 400 to 500 stores a year. So it was almost a race to market, you know, who could be on the best corners and the best communities throughout the country. And I think Walgreens grew a lot more organically through built-to-suit development with third-party developers, you know, meaning that they kind of did one store at a time, whereas I think CVS, you know, was doing that as well. However, they had a lot more acquisitions with certain chains, you know, over the years, such as Eckerd, you know, or Long's on the West Coast. And so they've kind of were growing by, you know, acquiring chains from a real estate perspective. You know, from our operating perspective, I think CVS has always been a little bit more healthcare focused. They've had, you know, their PBM and Caremark for years. I think as of late, you're starting to see Walgreens, you know, bringing on a new CEO and trying to, be a little bit more healthcare driven versus, you know, front end retail driven, like maybe they historically were. So I think that those are the big differences between them.
I appreciate that. Really, really eye-opening for our listeners, and I'm sure they love that as well. From a deal-seeking perspective or underwriting perspective, what are essential fundamentals to consider when looking into the sector?
Well, I think people have to realize every deal is unique on its own. You know, some stores do better in the back end, you know, pharmacy, and some stores do better on the front end. I think really looking at the underlying real estate quality, but then also the, you know, rent per square foot is a huge, huge deal. You know, some of these drugstores have over market rents, and, you know, of course buyers purchase these assets, on, you know, and pay a premium, you know, for the credit quality, like any other triple net investment, but just making sure that premium and that rent per square foot, isn't say 40% over market, and maybe it's 10 or 20% over market. But you know, it's a profitable store and you kind of weigh that risk. And I think that's the biggest thing is you know, rent levels and profitability for that specific store.
Good deal. Appreciate the insight. What do current investment landscapes look like in the sector? And where do you see the most investment interest coming from at present?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think But most of the interest right now is private 1031 investors. I think that they're and investors that have experience in some drugstores or maybe have owned some in the past is the biggest the biggest interest that we're seeing as far as buyer pool. I think some of the institutional investors might be pencils down on drugstores. Some of them are purchasing CVSs, but a lot of them are full on Walgreens credit. So mostly private buyers and 1031 buyers.
Okay, good to know. Talk to us a little bit about what investment trends you've seen shift in the last few years. You touched on it a little here, but especially with the boom of pharmacy interest during the pandemic. So what trends have come, what are to stay?
Yeah, another good question. You're on fire. I think with the pandemic, it was interesting, especially with healthcare. I think before pre-pandemic, there was a lot of concerns about footprint sizes with the three big chains and overmarket rents, everything I touched on. And then the pandemic, they kind of got a boost with revenues, with vaccine and booster sales. And so the revenues, obviously kind of went up, and I think a lot of investors, 1031 investors, kind of came back to the drugstores. I think since the sugar high of COVID vaccine revenues has kind of come off the drugstore chains, I think we're starting to see some investors shy away from them again, and then the prior concerns of saturation, if you have four or five stores in a 6 mile radius, how is that going to be sustainable? Those sorts of questions have started coming to the forefront again. So, I think those underlying issues or questions have started to kind of come back since the pandemic has kind of slowed down.
Yeah, I appreciate all of that. So we're starting to get into kind of the nitty-gritty of it. So let's talk about some of the current macroeconomic factors, and how pharmacy and other medical assets are being affected. So as an example, inflation, rising interest rates, higher insurance cost. Talk about
Right.
how these assets are being affected by those conditions.
Well, I think with inflation, the big knock on Walgreens investments is that they're flat as far as having no rental increases. And some of these have no rental increases for 75 years. So believe it or not, there are, after the initial term and the options, the rent remains the same. And so I think that's a big issue that a lot of investors are having to, address. I think another thing is staffing shortages. I think when there's, three or four drug stores in a 5 mile radius, I mean, there's only so many qualified pharmacists and staff that can support that many stores. So I think we're starting to see some consolidation with the chains as far as with staffing issues and operating and overhead costs. They and just so where the overlap is, we're starting to see some store closures.
That's really interesting, especially about the staffing, issues, and that makes total sense. So, talking specific, we did high level. Let's talk specifically about some different operators. So, example, Rite Aid's bankruptcies, Walgreens changed credit rating. Can you give our listeners a little bit specifics about the different operators here?
Yeah, I mean, Rite Aid, is going through a bankruptcy and they're going through a restructure. And so for a lot of investors, it's basically pencils down. I think that their footprint might go from 1,900 stores down to 11, 1,200 stores. I think the general sentiment is that they're going to come out, healthier, obviously, hopefully. And, there's some Rite Aid stores that were underwriting during their restructure that are doing 15, 16 million in sales. So they do have a lot of good stores. I think they just need to get a handle on their footprint. With Walgreens, I think they obviously just went through a downgrade in early December. It was nothing major that happened or anything like that. I mean, they were on watch from Moody's since October, so it wasn't a big surprise to the ones that are following closely. But the downgrade did affect obviously those investments and how they're being viewed. And I think with CVS, they've been doing fine compared to the other two chains, but all that drugstore financial news, I think the last 12 months is hasn't been positive. It's mostly been negative, I think, has affected CVS indirectly. So, that's kind of what we're seeing.
I appreciate the overview, and I'm sure our listeners do as well. So, kind of broadening it back out, give us your short and long-term outlook for the sector overall, and then why would you have that vision?
I think in the short run, it's the transactions have been down quite a bit, the last, 7 or 8 months for the reasons, I mentioned. But I think we're seeing all the chains take proactive steps and closing certain stores and shrinking their footprint. I don't have a crystal ball, obviously, but if I had to guess, I mean, I think in, 10, 15 years, instead of Walgreens and CVS having 9,000 or 8,600 locations, they might get down to, 6,500 or 7,000 locations. So it's important for investors just to really make sure if they're buying these to purchase, in the top, say 50% of performers. And so I think that in the long run, that's what we'll see.
Appreciate that outlook. One factor to consider, how or additional ones if you have them top of mind, but how do factors like aging, population, and advancing in healthcare impact the sector?
Yeah, so obviously with the baby boom generation and needing healthcare, I think that's a huge customer base for the chains, moving forward. I think if you look at Walgreens in particular, 80% of the United States population lives within 5 miles of a Walgreens. So if you guys kind of stop and think about that for a second, I think that the drugstore chains have a barrier to entry. It's a strong barrier to entry for another chain or concept to come in and get that brick and mortar retail. It would take years, and so they're at their position to unique advantage to help consumers moving forward with healthcare, whether it be by clinics or having a PA on site to dispense more maintenance medications. I think that moving forward, they're going to be an important piece of the healthcare landscape.
Yeah, and you mentioned that earlier, CVS kind of more in that health and healthcare space already, but maybe other retailers also following suit. So I think that's an important topic that you just raised. What changes do you think will have the most lasting impact throughout 2024 and beyond?
Changes as far as what kind of changes do you mean?
Whether that be downgrading, like the bigger chains, downgrading
Just the recent
stores,
events.
yeah, just recent
Right.
events, or as you mentioned, inserting like a PA on site, maybe being more healthcare focused, kind of coming into that space. Anything
Right.
that you're seeing, or anything that we didn't talk about yet that you're seeing that is a change that you think will last?
Well, I think in the next couple of years, the downgrade with Walgreens is a pretty big deal. S&P still has them investment grade, but Moody's has them, one notch below. And there's a lot of CMBS loans that are on Walgreens properties. So, there's certain cash sweep, events that could happen that are triggered by downgrades. And so, I think from the lending landscape with Walgreens in particular, it'll be interesting to see. How that's handled with CMBS loans here the next, 3 or 4 months. And and then a couple years out, I think that once the footprint, I keep referring to that, but once there's been some store closures and a lot of that overlap's gone away and the chains kind of work through what stores that they're committed to, in the long run. And a lot of these leases do, get restructured and recasted out for 10 or 15 years. And there's a little bit more certainty on what stores they're committed to. I think a lot of buyers will start to, begin to come back to them. Whereas I think now in the short term, there's a lot of opportunity if buyers are, willing to kind of go through, the investments out there.
Good deal. Well, that is some positive news. I appreciate that. And one thing that you just mentioned is talking about leases. So you mentioned this, and even on our prep call, you said that many pharmacy leases are coming due. How are owners and operators approaching these upcoming negotiations?
Well, there's certain owners that kind of don't want to deal with it and aren't really, proactive, which is typical. And then there's some owners that are being proactive and which I think is, it's good hygiene to look at these every year and just kind of see the store profitability and talk to your tenant and know how the store is doing. A lot of the leases have already been restructured. And so, I would estimate there's probably, 400 to 700, Walgreens leases alone that are going to be, kind of coming due here for their first option in the next few years. And so, you got to look at, how your rent level is compared to, market rent levels. And obviously profitability and having a good advisor or a good team behind you to know what a good offer is for a lease restructure. So I think that's another piece of owner, another subset of owners kind of realize that, and we've been pretty busy with a lot of underwriting those. So yeah.
Absolutely. So, firstly, I'll give a cheeky answer to this. Without obviously calling you and hiring your firm, how can current or potential pharmacy owners navigate today's market? How are you advising them? Maybe give them some a little bit of advice, obviously, without just calling you all directly.
Yeah, I think being aware of, surrounding competition to your store, how many stores and how close are they, when those leases are coming due, obviously your store performance, and the rent levels I keep going back to, but really that's critical. That's how these tenants are analyzing, what stores they're going to keep open and which ones they're not. And so I think those are big factors. Another thing is, if you do have financing, when your loan comes due and how many years of firm term you're going to have left at that time, what your balance is going to be, and just being 4 or 5, even 10 years ahead of it, and not waiting till a year before your loan comes due or option comes due to start looking deep into it.
For sure. Appreciate that for everyone listening, and I'm sure they do as well. Love that advice for our clients here. Third topic. So we want to ask a couple of rapid fire questions. So given your specialized background and expertise, I'm sure our listeners are curious to hear your answers. So first
Go
one,
ahead.
if you were given $50 million today and had to invest it immediately, what would your go-to asset type and location be, and why?
Well, I think not to sound biased, but to get right to it, I would look at short-term Walgreens. I mean, in general, I would look at short-term. When I say short-term, I mean, leases with 2, 3, 4, 5 years of term. I would look at net lease in general for that, and more specifically towards Walgreens. These Walgreens cap rates have come up to 8.5, 9 cap on 3 and 4 year leases. And if you buy it strategically, and this goes for all net lease, not just drugstores, where maybe local market rents are 15 and the tenant's paying, 17, or they're paying at market rent, there's really no downside if the tenant leaves. And then, if you're talking about Walgreens and getting a 9 cap, that's a nice spread over where interest rates are, and you can't really say that about too many other investments out there right now. So that's right for the money.
I love it. I love to hear that. And second rapid fire question is, what is your favorite tool or software that you use on the job? And I promise this is not a trick question.
Well, besides Crexie,
Yeah.
so you I think Salesforce has a really good commercial real estate platform. It's called Apto. It's a great database that we use, to track all the owners and the properties. And so I'd say that's a huge deal for us, Apto.
Perfect. Got to make sure that the client Rolodex is always up to speed, your notes and your taking and everything
Yeah.
like that. So I couldn't agree more. So as we wrap up, any parting words that you'd like to share with our audience? Words of wisdom, advice, anything that you want to share?
No, I think appreciate you having me on, and we're an open book, we're a resource. So if anyone has any questions on drugstores, feel free to reach out. You don't have to be an owner. I mean, you could be a broker, lender, anything. So more than happy to answer any questions and just be a resource for everybody.
That's amazing. I'm sure our listeners will do that, just that. I appreciate so much for you joining and for sharing your insights. I know you are very busy, so we love that you gave us the time to sit down and share your thoughts with us. So if
Thank
our
you.
listeners want to hear more, how can they get in touch? Email, social media, give us all the details.
Well, our website's probably the best. It's just pharmapropertygroup.com. You'll have all my information there and email and whatnot. So that's probably the best way to find us.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Crexy for video recordings of each episode. For a full list of episodes and show notes, visit crexy.com/podcast. That's crexi.com/podcast. And sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. Take care, and we'll see you next time.